This piece has been brought to you by Bonnie Plants, bonnieplants.com.
I'm Damon Bolte, host of The Speakeasy. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good morning and welcome to Inside School Food, and welcome back. I'm your host, Laura Stanley. We've been pretty quiet all winter, but today marks the start of a much busier spring season. And I am really excited about today's guest. We are honored to have with us today Helena Bottomiller-Evich, who is a senior food and agriculture policy reporter at Politico. Helena is the journalist behind some of the most thorough and important reporting we've seen on the current child nutrition reauthorization. As for today's topic, I'm not so excited. The latest CNR news is disheartening, and that's to put it mildly. On April 7th, so that's 10 days ago, Helena broke this story to the subscribers of Politico Pro. She wrote, and I quote, "The House Education and the Workforce Committee has finally come up with a child nutrition reauthorization bill, and it looks like it could be everything health advocates feared." She went on to describe a number of critical, troubling differences between this bill and the Senate's CNR bill. So today, with Helena's help, we're going to unpack the contents of the House bill and look at how it might impact people working inside school food. So Helena, welcome to the show, and thank you for joining us under this cloud.
Yeah, happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Before we dig into the contents of the House committee's bill, I just want to quickly remind listeners how reauthorization works. Both the Senate and the House have committees assigned to separately drafting their own child nutrition bills. And these bills deal not only with school meal programs, which we're going to mostly talk about today, but a host of other child and family nutrition programs such as WIC and SNAP and CACFP and the Summer Food Service Program. The committees conduct their own research and their own meetings with constituents, and they hold their own hearings. So it's an intensive process on both sides, involving over a year of hard work on an array of bills that get folded into this big package comprised of many moving parts. And then eventually both committees' bills are merged and sent on to the House for passage. And I do want to remind listeners that we did a pretty detailed explanation of the whole process in an episode called CNR 2015 Walkthrough, and you can find that. It was June 22nd. You can find that in InsideSchoolFood.com if you want a refresher. The Senate CNR bill was released in early January of this year, and at that point, reauthorization was already 3 months behind schedule. The Senate bill was hailed as a bipartisan victory. Nobody got everything they wanted, of course, but it was protective of new policies that have expanded free meal service to high-needs communities, and it's largely protective of rules that have dramatically improved the nutritional quality of meals, competitive foods, snacks, and so forth offered at school. Most listeners are likely very familiar with the contents of that bill by now, but if you need a refresher, there's a link to a summary from the Food Research and Action Center on today's show page. So, but Helena, before I ask you about the new House bill, is there anything more you think we should say at this point about that Senate bill?
I think it's important to remember, I mean, you touched on how much work has gone into this. This has been months and months of work and waiting, and advocates, I think, on both sides of the issue, on all sides of the issue, are really anxious to actually see something move forward. It's mm-hmm. just, we're so, with such a, it's, there's been this long, drawn-out process. So, you know, both committees are making some progress, but I yeah. think everyone feels, you know, like, let's get the show on the road. So that's sort of the point that we're at.
It's a little bit torturous at this point.
That's a good word, yes. Yeah.
Okay, so on to the House bill. You told me that it actually was leaked to Politico. You know, what does that mean? Does that mean that it's not really ready for prime time? I mean, what's the document that you wrote about and that is now online?
Yeah, so we obtained what's called a discussion draft, and it was 170 pages. It's basically a draft bill, so it's not necessarily the exact bill that the committee would unveil for markup. They might still be making changes. The point of having a discussion draft is to be able to circulate it to your stakeholders and get feedback from them, run things by them, and, you know, make changes if you want based on that feedback. So it's pretty early in the process. I think one of the reasons we felt it was so important to get our hands on this bill and post it was because this has been such a long process and people are were very anxious to see what was going to be in the House bill. So it's not. It's important to remember that it definitely could change before the House moves forward. But to see what the committee is thinking on various issues certainly sheds light on where this process is headed. And as you mentioned, health advocates have been somewhat dismayed about the direction that they see the House going.
Okay, that's helpful. Let's talk about what has them worried. Do you want to start with, I don't know, start wherever you want to start. What has them worried?
So I think the number one kind of heartbreaker for health advocates is the changes to the community eligibility provision. And it's not just health groups that are not a fan of what the House wants to do. It's also the School Nutrition Association. So basically what the House draft bill looks to do is make it harder for schools to qualify for CEP. So it would make this wonky change to how, you know, what threshold of schools would qualify. So instead of it being 40% of your students directly certified through SNAP or other government programs, it would bump up to 60%. And so in real terms, if you look at multipliers from hunger groups and USDA, you're probably looking at actually schools with between 65 and 95 or so percent eligibility for free and reduced meal. So you would be bumped, a school that maybe is 65% right now qualifies under this bill. It would only be schools that are, you know, 95 or so plus eligible that would be enrolled in CEP. So the real impact of that would be there would be many, many schools that are now doing universal free meals that would no longer be able to under the House provision. So both SNA and a broad coalition of health groups are pretty upset by that. They're not really being very vocal about it, but certainly that was the part of the bill that's been the most talked about. So if you look at the comments that Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack or Kevin Concannon, the head of FNS, are making, they're very focused on CEP and that being, for them, the most troubling part of the House bill.
Right.
But there are there are many other changes we can go into, too. But I think the CEP, you know, to change to basically raise the threshold of CEP has, I think, frustrated health advocates and definitely school nutrition leaders who have really viewed that program as successful, not only to reduce the stigma sometimes attached to school meals, but also to reduce paperwork and to increase access.
Yeah, it's been regarded as a tremendous success. And as it happens, your report on this discussion draft was released the same day that FRAC released its progress report for CEP. And it's just, you know, working fantastically well. I actually spoke with Jean Ronnie, president of the School Nutrition Association, this morning, and she reiterated the SNA position that they are really committed to CEP. She talked about just, you know, in her own district of St. Paul's Public Schools, the importance it you know, it has had in reaching more kids and helping them make ends meet. So there, I have put the SNA response about CEP as well as the FRAC report on today's show page. You can find links.
Both FRAC and the Center for Budget and Policy Priorities, they have posted basically spreadsheets where you can go in and you can actually see which schools are currently using CEP, mm-hmm. but would get bumped under the House bill. So it's pretty easy to see which schools would be impacted.
Please send that to me, and I'll share that with listeners also, Helena.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. Okay, so that's the worst news, and that's pretty worrisome. Let's talk about the rest.
So the House bill makes a number of changes to nutrition standards. So, you know, clearly your readers or your listeners are familiar with the fact that, you know, the nutrition standards and the Healthy Hunger Free Kids Act, or stemming from the Healthy Hunger Free Kids Act, have been among the most controversial debates that we've had in recent times. So in the Senate bill, the committee was very careful to not actually write changes to the nutrition standards into the bill. So mm-hmm. they actually basically come to this agreement, this middle ground, where SNA agrees and the White House agrees and both parties agree on certain changes. Like, that's where you get the 80% whole grain middle ground, but it's mm-hmm. not actually written into the bill. So, the committee says they're very concerned about setting a precedent where Congress is writing the nitty-gritty of nutrition standards into law. They want to leave that up to USDA and, you know, with the help of Institute of Medicine and bodies like that. So, mm-hmm. but in the House bill, there are some specifics. They want to block Target 2 and Target 3 sodium. Mm-hmm. So they would block it until there's more science specific to children. But I think most people view that language as essentially blocking it for the time being. Mm-hmm. They would also call for a review of whole grain rich standards and sodium standards. So, and that review would have to include, you know, administrators and nutrition folks and actual program operators. And I think the point of that would be to look at, you know, how have these changes impacted revenue and operations. Mm-hmm. The House bill does not cut the half cup fruit and vegetable requirement for meals, which, as I'm sure all of your listeners are aware, has been very hotly debated because of the costs. And, you know, that was a new mandate to have that half cup requirement. And the SNA, of course, wanted it to be not required on every tray, but, right. But you know, offered.
Mm-hmm.
It also makes the fruit and vegetable snack program, the fresh fruit and vegetable snack program, open up to all forms of produce. So a lot of high-poverty schools use that program to get their kids an extra serving of fruits and vegetables and, you know, sort of teach about healthy snacking. It's about a $175 million nationwide program. And there's been a long debate about whether or not it should should stay fresh only or mm-hmm. should allow dried and canned and frozen foods. And the committee would basically just, their draft bill would eliminate the word fresh and it would be open up.
Right. The language reads, strike the word fresh. And that, you know, kind of a shocker. Yeah.
Yeah.
So they're basically the fresh fruit and vegetable program, which we, you know, are also proud of. Would be something else entirely. So,
it would be, would totally miss the change unless you search the document for the word
exactly.
fresh. So
exactly.
That's how you can find that.
Mm-hmm.
The proposal would also allow any item that fits into a meal pattern to be sold a la carte. So this is a change that the School Nutrition Association has advocated for. They argue that it would make it easier for schools, you know, to not have to kind of differentiate between foods that can be sold a la carte, and it mm-hmm. would open up possibilities for items to be sold. Of course, health advocates think that those opportunities would be mostly things like pizza and french fries and hamburgers and maybe things that could very well be a part of a balanced meal,
right.
But they don't want children to be just buying those things just for their
every day.
You know,
which a lot of teenagers especially would do. Yeah, so that's very concerning.
There are two views on that change.
Mm-hmm.
The bill would also really scale back, if not completely eliminate, the requirement that fundraisers, like school-based fundraisers, mm-hmm. meet the nutritional standards. So again, if you're the PTA, you might think this is a great provision because we can hold, you know, fundraisers more often. If you wanted to do the cookie dough or the, you know, the pizza, that wouldn't have to meet nutrition or require, you know, nutrition standards. But then on the other side, you have health advocates who think that this could pretty much undermine all of the changes that you're making in the cafeteria.
Yeah, anyway, we have spent some time on the show talking about the amazing progress that so many districts have done in introducing healthy fundraisers with or without food. And the word undermine is spot on because, you know, what we have said on the show is these districts are really showing an example of success to others. And this bill is effectively saying, it doesn't really matter. Let's go back to the old way. It was easy. So, yeah, upsetting.
Yeah, and I'm sure your listeners also know that a lot of states have created their own sort of liberal exemptions and so on. So there's definitely, I think, there's a range of implementation on that front. Like
right.
some states are very strict and others
not,
are less
right,
strict.
Right. Right. Helena, I want to return to sodium because I am a little bit confused about what the two bills say.
Mm-hmm.
The Senate bill, I'm going to read it here. It calls for assessment of, quote, whether the latest scientific research indicates that further reduction in sodium is necessary to safeguard the health of children. And then it sets a date of July 2020 for a report out on that research. The House committee calls for something that is a little bit different, but I'm not sure I agree that it's dramatically different. The thing that I'm seeing in the House bill that I don't see in the Senate bill is that industry be allowed 3 years to come into compliance with whatever new targets are set at that time. So as you say, that does delay things by quite a bit. I couldn't say whether or not industry is saying they would need 3 years to come into compliance if there were a change.
Yeah, I'm not sure how that would work in practice. Certainly both bills aim to delay future sodium. So my understanding of the Senate bill is it delays target two from 2017 to 2019, so it would give the industry a longer timeline. And then it technically leaves Target 3 in place, but it calls for, as you mentioned, a study by 2020. And because Target 3 is currently on schedule for 2022, that effectively bumps, you know, that target to basically be open to change based on whatever the report in 2020 says.
So,
you also have to remember that they're going to do a new bill in 2020, probably, or 2021, or what, you know, depending on how this goes. So, you know, you would be in another cycle of child nutrition reauthorization.
Oh, can't wait.
So, yeah. So looking at Target 3 is almost, you know, a premature
Absolutely.
Discussion because it will be up for debate before
it
kicks in.
I just want to add that there's a little bit of good news here. There is new reimbursement for breakfast, which was, you know, something the industry really, really asked for and didn't get. It's not much, though. It's a matter of, 2 or 3 cents per breakfast?
Yeah, I think it's 2 cents. It's a little bit tough to tell with the draft exactly what kind of funding levels you're looking at for various things. The other thing that advocates have been looking at a lot is funding for summer, expanding access to summer feeding programs.
Mm-hmm.
So my understanding is that the House bill does reduce some of the barriers to summer food, and it would probably expand access, but it does not go nearly as far or give as much money to summer EBT to kind of fill the gap for kids that don't necessarily have access to summer feeding sites. So the Senate bill aims to give about $30 a month to children that qualify for, you know, free and reduced during the school year but don't have access during the summer. And that would be an expansion that would probably impact about 285,000 children, so pretty sizable scale. And then in the House bill, I know that it's much, much more limited. It's more of a pilot. It's narrow, and I think it's about $15 a month that they're looking at. I know that's one thing that hunger groups are taking a really close look at to try to understand exactly what kind of funding and you know, what level of EBT the House bill would look to give students.
Right. It's
they're
not
very
clear.
Focused on reducing hunger in the summer.
Yeah,
this
yeah
round.
Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. This has been really helpful, Helena. I want to pause for station break. And when we come back, I'm going to ask you to engage in a little speculation about what's going on behind the scenes. You're listening to Inside School Food. Today's guest is Politico's Helena Bottomiller-Evich, here to fill us in on the latest development, or maybe I should say the latest setback in the progress of CNR. We will be right back.
It's not just your garden. It's the way you live. And there's so much to know. But you have help. Bonnie Plants. Now with Bonnie's app, Homegrown, you can learn about veggie and herb varieties, track and record your garden with photos and notes, share on Facebook and Twitter, and so much more. How'd you ever grow without it? Get Homegrown with Bonnie Plants for iPhone and Android. The more you know, the better you can grow. With Bonnie.
Welcome back. Okay, Helena, can you help us understand why the House committee is not aligning its bill with the bipartisan bill released by the Senate committee?
Well, I think it's important to understand kind of the difference between the House and the Senate. In general, the House tends to be a more partisan body, and the Senate tends to be more bipartisan just because of the way the different chambers are structured. It ends up pretty much across the board. The Senate tends to be more bipartisan. The House tends to be more partisan. So, mm-hmm. you know, it's not altogether surprising that that the bill would be more partisan than the Senate version. I do think that the extent to which this bill is somewhat out of step with what the School Nutrition Association has been advocating has raised some eyebrows, and you know, particularly with CEP. And you know, I can't answer exactly what the motivation of the House committee is, but I think observers are wondering if this isn't sort of a way to show kind of the conservative credentials, right? To tighten up the number of students that would qualify for something like CEP could be something that would really appeal to conservatives that are very interested in not giving government benefits to students that don't absolutely need them. So with CEP, even though you're talking about very high poverty schools, you still are going to be giving meals to some students that don't technically qualify.
Mm-hmm.
So I think understanding the political frame around this is important. That's not to say that that's necessarily why they're doing this. You know, there may be folks on the committee that think this is just better policy. I can't say for sure, but in general, we do expect to have more partisan bills from the House, and certainly the House members of the committee and the leaders have already been raising concerns about this bill. If you look at some of the Democrats' complaints, they're calling it an erosion of CEP, mm-hmm. lack of meaningful investment, failure to expand things. So they're certainly not happy with the discussion draft that we
released. Yeah, so the language is getting extreme, which is not a good sign for moving forward. You know, in digging around about this, I found an interesting document online from 2010, and it's identified as a fact sheet from the House Education and Workforce Committee. Now, mind you, this was released during the 111th Congress, when Democrats were still in the majority in the House, but of course it was a lame duck session, and that was when Healthy Hunger Free Kids Act was passed. And yet this document is released with Republican Representative John Klein at the top of the document, identified as the new chair of the committee. And it uses some very strong language. The title of the document is Democrats Continue Out-of-Control Spending Spree, Bogging Down Child Nutrition with Costly Federal Mandates and a Stealth Tax on Working Families. And it accuses Democrats of budget gimmicks that hide billions more in future spending obligations. So, you know, I don't know how they were able to release this before the 112th Congress was actually in session, but they did. And it certainly sets the stage for the kind of environment and what you're describing now. It is worrisome. And it's certainly not the first time we've seen child nutrition programs as political football. You know, if we look back to the Contract with America and what was it, 1995, there was an attempt to take down the National School Lunch Program entirely and cede authority to states via block grants. And then there were the cuts under Ronald Reagan. So it's kind of an old story if you look back.
Yeah. A lot of people mm-hmm. forget that John Klein voted against the Healthy Hunger Free Kids Act. I think certain close watchers of child nutrition reauthorization sort of always had that in the back of their head while they were watching this.
Absolutely, yeah. And then there's also just a more practical matter. You told me, and I looked it up after we spoke, that there is a report from the Congressional Budget Office that projects an increase of spending for child nutrition programs of, $1.1 billion over the next 10 years. And as you told me, this was supposed to be a budget neutral bill. So I'm assuming this is an issue for the House Republicans.
So that's the Senate bill. The Congressional Budget Office estimated, you know, they basically do these projections to try to estimate how much certain things will cost. They estimated it would cost $1.1 billion over 10 years for the Senate bill, which was supposed to be budget neutral. And the reason it's important for it to be budget neutral is it makes it much, much easier to get bipartisan support. Mm-hmm. You have a lot of Republicans in particular, some Democrats as well, but mostly Republicans that are very concerned about spending, and they want offsets. So if you're going to spend money on one thing, you got to find cuts somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And in the House, they do not, as far as I know, they do not yet have an estimate for how much their bill would cost. But if it costs a lot of money, particularly for the breakfast reimbursement increase or something, they would most likely make tweaks to that because there's just no appetite for that kind of increased spending. There's really been a focus in Washington, particularly with the Republican-controlled Congress, to rein in spending mm-hmm. wherever possible. So that is the backdrop against which this bill is going to be considered if it indeed, you know, does move forward. And it's important to remember that. I mean, when you have bipartisan agreement that you probably do need a higher reimbursement for meals, mm-hmm. but you can't get it because there's no money, I mean, that's just the reality, I think, that child nutrition programs are going to be in for some time.
Well, and at the same time, food prices are going up. And, you know, when you think about over the course of 10 years, $1.1 billion probably wouldn't even cover that. You know, a current spending for child nutrition is $20.6 billion. So, it adds on some, but when you just think about the need over the course of a decade to match rising prices, it is worrisome. I just have to say we spent $601 billion on military in 2015. I just have to say that. So.
It's amazing. I will say it's amazing what school nutrition operators are able to do with the amount of money that given. I think it's a miracle that 30-plus million kids a day are fed on the budgets that they have. And I've yet to meet a nutrition operator or leader who did not think that we could spend a little bit more.
Yeah.
On the reimbursement
and
rate.
And a little bit more.
That is one area of broad agreement.
Yeah, yeah. And a little bit more can go a long way, 10 cents more, and as we've demonstrated on this show many times.
10 cents more would be mm-hmm. That's
enormous.
Massive.
Yeah. Enormous. So, again, looking at impacts, just thinking about, you know, some of the people working inside school food who might be listening today, you know, for instance, districts that are counting on enrolling new sites in community eligibility for school year 2016-17. That was my real reason for getting in touch with Jean Ronnie this morning. I wanted to find out, first of all, if they could continue doing that in the absence of a new CNR. She said yes, and she was very emphatic in saying we are going to encourage, you know, robust enrollment. And as long as there's a stalemate and no new bill, that can go on. So that will be interesting to see if they're successful in doing that.
I find it incredibly hard to believe that Congress would get its act together in time to impact this coming school year.
Right.
It would, you know, there are a lot of things that have to fall into place for these bills to move forward and come together and actually get enough support to pass in an election year to boot. So there are a lot of things, there are a lot of barriers still to getting this done. And I would, if I were a school nutrition operator, I would sit tight and keep close track of the process because nothing is moving quickly right now.
Right. So that's good for districts that are planning on enrolling in CEP, but it's not so great for districts and that are, for instance, hoping for new farm-to-school grants because those won't be approved, right? And things like badly needed equipment upgrades, you know, their funding has to be approved in a new bill or it's not there.
If there is, if there has been, a relatively stable level of funding for programs like that, I think it's safe to assume that those kinds of programs would be carried over, or maybe they would just get extended. But as far as getting increases, that is not something I would expect. Because if there isn't a new child nutrition bill, there won't really be the policy to go along with those types of increases. So
right.
I don't expect anything to get defunded or to expire. I don't think Congress would let anything like that happen. And most of these programs continue on autopilot anyway, but I would not anticipate increases for any of those programs that folks are looking at.
Yeah. And I'm also wondering, and I haven't spoken to anyone yet because this news is so new, about, you know, potential impacts on producers and vendors of, for instance, whole grain-rich foods for K through 12. You know, they're there. They've done a wonderful job of developing products in compliance that kids like to eat. But they need certainty in order to produce in the right amounts. Uncertainty can be very expensive for schools because supply tends to dry up when producers don't know whether or not the rules are going to change.
I would be curious to know whether or not schools won't just kind of assume that the policies are going to stay the same. Mm-hmm. So there's some hardship exemptions, but for the most part, the 100% whole grain rich stands. Under the Senate bill, it would go to 80%, but again, nothing's moving quickly, so I don't know that would kick in time for next school year. The School Nutrition Association has actually advocated for USDA to go ahead and use the regulatory process to implement the kind of grand compromise everyone agreed to in January, but USDA has so far said that it will not do that, and it wants Congress to actually come up with a full reauthorization bill before it acts.
And industry certainly would ask for certainty, and that applies to sodium also. They just want to know what it's going to be so that they can produce to scale at affordable prices for our districts.
I think it's fair to say that there's not certainty right now.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, for just about everyone, it's unclear how this will unfold.
Well, yes, it certainly is. But Helena, I am very grateful to you for helping us understand where we stand and really all the great reporting you've been doing on the politics of school food. We look forward to whatever you report out next. Hopefully the news will be good. But at the very least, we know that you're going to help us understand what's going on. So thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
This is Inside School Food. We've been speaking with Helena Batamiller-Evich, who is Senior Food and Agriculture Policy Reporter at Politico. I've posted lots of links on today's show page on InsideSchoolFood.com. They include the House bill that brought Helena to us today. If you have the courage to you know, make your way through that. If you have any questions or thoughts to share, you can talk to us on Facebook or via the contact form on InsideSchoolFood.com. Inside School Food is also available on our host station, the HeritageRadioNetwork.org, along with lots of other fabulous podcasts about food and issues in food. You can also find us on iTunes, Stitcher, and a host of other podcasting platforms. Do remember to follow us on Twitter or Facebook or sign up for our newsletter, because that's how we know who's listening and that helps us to serve you better. I'm Laura Stanley. Next week, no politics, I promise. Just good food when we visit with some of the creative people behind the 18 school-based California Culinary Center and their new online database of fabulous recipes for K through 12. I hope you'll join us.
Thanks for listening to this program on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @Heritage_Radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.